Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. It is wonderful to welcome back into our studios for her first monthly visit of 2023, our good friend Nan Calvert. Nan, I was just thinking the other day, how many years has it been that you have been doing these monthly programs for the morning show?
That's so interesting you asked me that, because I was thinking that same thing, and I have no idea. It's been a long time.
I mean, certainly 5 years, 6 years.
I think it's way more than that, Greg.
Well, time flies when you're having fun.
I know.
So we're grateful for all the work that you've done to bring some really, really interesting, important people to the morning show, and in a sense, more important topics of interest and concern before the public. And we're going to be starting out 2023 by talking about, of all things, salt, one of those things that seems rather innocuous at first hearing, but salt can have a very adverse impact on the environment around us, which is why there is something called Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week, which is next week. Before we introduce our guest, just give a kind of a brief capsule summary of why it is that it is important for us to be talking about salt.
It's important to talk about salt because at this point in our area and many other places in the country, our fresh water is contaminated and heavily contaminated with chlorides. And that comes from a number of different sources, but one of those sources is the salt that is applied to our roadways and driveways, parking lots, sidewalks. It seems like it just disappears into the magic land of away. But there is no such thing, and it ends up, the chloride portion of it anyway, mostly ends up in our waterways with really detrimental effects on aquatic systems. So that's why we have to be vigilant and very careful about salt application. We can't fix what's already been done, but we can decrease the amount that is deposited into our fresh water. You just have to keep remembering that all the water we have is all the water we have at this point. And so we really have to be acutely aware of how we regard it, how we use it, how we treat it. And so that's why Salt Awareness Week is so important, and it's why it's so important to have my lovely friend and former colleague, Laura Buska, on with us today, because she's going to talk about Salt Awareness Week.
Very good. So Laura Buska is with Root Pike WIN, Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, and she is, among other things, in addition to coordinator of all their communications, she is the Respect Our Waters Program Manager, and I suspect that this matter of Salt Awareness Week falls under that umbrella, since we are talking so much about safeguarding our drinking water supply and safeguarding our environment in general. So that's why Laura Buska is here at Nan's invitation to talk about this important issue. Laura, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Before we get started on the issue itself, let's find out a little bit more about where you come from originally and kind of your professional path that ultimately took you to Root Pike Wind.
Sure. I'm from Kenosha, Wisconsin. I was born in Racine. I spent about 6 years doing an entirely different career in Chicago doing hair, makeup, and event work, completely unrelated, but I continued to go to more and more environmentally conscious salons, and then I finally realized it was the environmental aspect that I was most interested in. And I also kept getting more and more managerial positions within the salons, so it just kind of all fit to go back to school and focus on environmental issues, and it really helped lay the pavement for where I am now.
Tell us what the background is for you being interested in the environment in the first place, and of course it's, as you just outlined, it is something that was kind of central to a lot of your focus, and then other waters swept you in different directions before you ultimately kind of came back to this. But where was kind of the origin of this concern for the environment?
Yeah, I've always been interested in science. It's always exciting to see how things work. Those moments when you learn something new and it just like opens, your eyes get big and it's very exciting. So it's easy to learn about those things. And then I started reading a book called Animal Factory, and it really showcased the way animal agriculture affects the environment, which is where it kind of all started for me. I kept doing more reading. I changed my dietary habits. I started to talk to more people about things, and I felt like I was learning these huge secrets that I wanted to share with other people. So that's why I do what I do.
Very good. So I think we will probably have time at the end to circle back to Root Pike Wind and learn a little more about everything that you do. But let's talk for a moment specifically about this program for which you are the manager, Respect Our Waters. Explain what that is, and then we'll get to the part about Salt Awareness Week, which is just one component of what that's about.
Yeah, well, Respect Our Waters is a program that works alongside 20 municipalities within southeastern Wisconsin. We work to provide their stormwater health and education and outreach for those municipalities' permitting requirements. Nan laid this beautiful foundation for us to continue this work that we're building. She used to manage the program. And so it really helps people to understand the issues that we're facing in our community, and my job is to bring that to southeastern Wisconsin.
And so Salt Awareness Week is just one piece of that.
It is one event of many throughout the year, and this one's a really neat one because it is a partnership between a handful of people. So the Wisconsin Saltwise Partnership, it's Wisconsin Saltwise, Milwaukee Riverkeeper, the Fox Wolf Watershed Alliance, City of Superior, Waukesha County Department of Parks and Land Use, and Root Pike Wind, which is where I hail from and where I had the good fortune to meet Nan.
Very good. So Nan, what's your recollection when you were managing the Respect Our Waters program? Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you maybe even helped kind of start it. Is that right?
No, I didn't start it. I continued it.
Mm-hmm. So at what point do you remember concern about salt being kind of central to its purpose?
From the get-go. Yeah. I mean, there are so many things that directly impact our water quality. And so it's not just, deposition of organic materials in various forms and petrochemicals and all those kinds of things, sedimentation that comes from erosion, but it's also salt. So it's always been one of the key foci to do education and outreach about, because people don't know. They still don't know. A lot of times in society we think, well, if a little is good, a lot is even better. And that's kind of the approach that people take for a number of different reasons. One, they're afraid of being sued if somebody falls down. And they don't know what else to do. They don't know what other kinds of things can be done to keep our walkways and driveways and whatnot safe. And so we try to talk to people about that too. So it's hard to break those ingrained habits, the things that you've done over and over and over again. But yeah, you talk and talk and talk about it, and then some change happens. And right. So that's a good thing.
Well, and it's kind of interesting, of course. We're also talking about this today on a day when the high temperature is going to be 42 and in the midst of a winter that, except for one really mm-hmm. nasty cold snap, has been an exceedingly mild winter, which does not mean we shouldn't talk about this. I mean, in some ways, this is the perfect time to be talking about it, because we can be talking about how to be ready for when that inevitable next cold spell comes. With ice, with snow, and all of that it brings. We need to talk about this.
We need to talk about it. You're right, because, you know, salt deposition in the form of de-icing chemicals isn't the only source of chloride contamination in our waterways. And the other component is that the municipalities really are working very hard on trying to reduce the amount of salt they deposit every year. And it's something that the general public doesn't know. I mean, why would you know that they've outfitted plows with different kinds of blades and road temperature sensors? You know, it's just not something we talk about every day. And so that's also part of our job, helping people understand that, yes, municipalities are trying very hard to do this. They know it's a problem. You know, that we all have to work together, whether you're a municipality or a store owner or a resident, we all have to work together, because all of us are contributing to the problem, but all of us can also help mitigate the problem.
For those of you just joining us, today is the first monthly visit of Nan Calvert to the morning show. And with us, Nan's invitation, is Laura Buska, who is with Root Pike Wind, the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. And we're talking about the Respect Our Waters program, which she manages, and specifically Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week, which is next week. So, Laura, who created Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week? Who, in a sense, organizes it? I know it's bigger than Root Pike Wind.
Yeah, it's a handful of people from really great groups all across Wisconsin, and it's really kind of led by Wisconsin Saltwise. Allison Madison, who's going to be our speaker on the last day, and she's going to talk about how you can be a Saltwise champion in your community. It's a really neat way to get this information, because it's very quick. It's 30 minutes on your lunch hour, you know, 12:30 to 1, virtual via YouTube. So you can watch it then. You can watch it when you get home to kind of talk about addressing those environmental tolls of the de-icers, the effects on our bodies of water, and actions that other people are taking. And then how can we as individuals practice the winter maintenance in ways that protects public safety, but also our environment.
Very good. So we are talking about the application of salt and the way in which it gets into our water supply, into our fresh water, which is, of course, one of our most precious resources, maybe the most precious resource. And so that's kind of the focus of this concern. So is it as easy as you put the ice down and then it somehow flows into the storm sewers and gets into the water? Is that how this happens in terms of sort of geographically, physically?
Yeah, when you have the snow melt, it starts to run into the sewer grates and the ditches, or the storm drains and the ditches, and those end up flowing into this rivers, lakes, streams, that end up flowing into Lake Michigan. And that happens to be one of the largest and only bodies of fresh water in the world. So we really, we live next to it. That kind of gives us this inherent responsibility to care for it, because it's just going to get increasingly more important.
So what kind of levels of salt are we talking about in our fresh water? I mean, how does that get measured? Who measures it? And what kind of levels are we seeing right now?
That's a really great question. I don't have the answer. I can get you the answer of who's doing that research. But there is research that shows that the levels of salt in Lake Michigan has steadily risen over the last, since like the 1970s, I think they've been doing this research. And it's been slowly rising every year. And that shows us that it's not going away, that when we add more salt, it's adding to the problem. So we know that we're continually going to hit that threshold if we don't stop putting so much down and adding so much to the problem.
Interestingly enough, in the beginning, when data was being collected on chloride deposition in fresh water, and it's not just Lake Michigan, by the way, it's our inland streams and ponds and that sort of thing. They weren't sampling deep enough because we know that salt water is heavier than fresh water or sweet water. And so it seemed to be not much of a problem in the mm-hmm. beginning. But then somebody remembered that, oh, yeah, you know, salt water is heavier than fresh water. And they started sampling much deeper and realized that this is a major problem. And a few years ago, a graduate student, and I'm sorry, her name is escaping me, but did an interesting study all over Wisconsin, actually, and discovered that here where we live, Racine, Kenosha, southeastern Wisconsin, is heavily contaminated. And there's a few reasons for that. One is that we have a high population density compared to people who live up north, say, or in any area that is a little bit more rural. And certainly because we have a whole lot more impervious surface, so we have a lot more pavement. And those things contribute to runoff that's heavily contaminated with chlorides.
So in other words, when you look at a body of water, if you're just sampling the top of it, mm-hmm. you're kind of skimming the surface literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. It's when you go deeper into that body of water, that's mm-hmm. when you really find even more salt,
mm-hmm.
and that matters.
I mean,
that matters as much, maybe even more in some cases.
Mm-hmm. Than enormously. Mm-hmm.
Those bottom-dwelling creatures are not used to that salt, and so that's affecting their habitat lower down, and it's also affecting the way that the water is moving, just because of the way that salt affects the fluidity of water.
Interesting. So does this end up killing wildlife or making it sick, or what is the direct impact in terms of aquatic wildlife?
So the data is new and the research is new, but it certainly impacts size. It impacts, so if you're talking about fish, impacts size, it impacts reproductive capabilities. It certainly impacts plant life in fresh bodies of water. And so, you know, as time goes on, and hopefully more money will be devoted to research on how it affects aquatic mammals, plants, insects, fish, you know, all of those things. No doubt the evidence will show that, this is a really serious problem. It's just not water contamination. That contamination is affecting everything. Because as I've said about a million times, everything is connected.
Right. So even when our soil gets contaminated mm-hmm. with salt, that's also an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And one can contaminate the other, mm-hmm. and there you go. And mm-hmm. it's very, very vicious cycle. What are we talking about when salt gets into our drinking water? Is it more of a factor that it just doesn't taste as good, or is it something that actually causes us harm?
Both. And on Wednesday, we're actually going to have Allison Couture. She's an associate professor at UW-Madison in the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. And she's going to be discussing salty drinking water and how that affects human health. We have a lot of wells around. And when we have contamination with salt in those wells, it's showing that it is affecting people's health in the same way that, you know, adding a lot of table salt to your food would affect you.
I suppose that's part of the problem, isn't it? I mean, a bit of salt is all but unavoidable, and also, you know, not necessarily a bad thing at all,
right.
but too much salt is a bad thing, and especially too much salt when you have no idea that you're taking in all this salt that you otherwise would maybe be more vigilant about. So it's mm-hmm. like a predator that's kind of entering your life and entering your health.
Yes, and alarmingly, you know, for quite some time the focus was on our open bodies of water, surface water contamination. Mm-hmm. But now we know that it's also contaminating groundwater, so that, you know, deep underground, salt is leaching into those bodies of water. And so, you know, it's everywhere at this point.
Mm-hmm. Nan, you said something early on about this being, in a sense, irreparable,
mm-hmm.
that once salt has kind of entered the picture, there's no option for reversing the trend mm-hmm. or curing that particular situation. Can you talk more about the irreversibility mm-hmm. of this?
So, it's sort of essentially at this point in time, it's in there for good because there isn't a municipality here, probably anywhere in Wisconsin, that has the kind of money to purchase the kind of technology and expertise that would desalinate water. Now, we know that in California, they do desalinization programs. So they take ocean water, extract the salt, and then put the water back in. But we don't have that capacity. And so we don't even know, what would the impact, what else is it extracting? How are you going to get the water back in there? And, all those kinds of things. So perhaps in the future, in hopefully not the too distant future, that will be an option. But at this point, it isn't an option.
It's just cost prohibitive to do that.
Yeah, it's just cost prohibitive. It just, can't do it at the moment.
Right. So in a sense, we have to live with what is there. Mm-hmm. And the point of Salt Awareness Week is to try to halt this progression mm-hmm. so we don't get to points that are even more dangerous.
Exactly. Slow the progression. Keep it at a level that's livable, survivable until you can do something about it that is a more permanent and effective fix.
Right.
And there are a lot of things that we can do.
Right. Let's talk about that for a few minutes. And one of the things we want to eventually get to what regular people can do, but we've already touched on the fact that there are lots of municipalities who are already working to make a difference on that. Laura, get us started with some of the things that municipalities are already doing and probably need to do more of in order to kind of turn this around.
Yeah, there. So this year we are, or I should say 2022, the Saltwise Partnership worked together to offer winter maintenance training for municipalities all about chlorides. And really, their ears are perking up because it is cost effective to be smart about how much chloride you're applying. It's cost effective to calibrate your trucks to make sure you're not applying extra salt on a road you don't need, or to use the road sensors to make sure, is it time to put down the salt? Mm-hmm. So it's a good way to mitigate how much salt we're putting down and also to help with taxpayer dollars, right, that we're not spending. So there is incentive there and public health. We obviously don't want people to be hurt on the roads, but we also want people to be able to drink clean water. So it's that balance of that as well. So they're doing more calibration. Places are learning to brine. So that's a lot less salt use going on the roads at a very specific timing. They really are trying their best to make a difference.
What is that about brining? Can you explain what that is?
It's using remnants of different processes that include salt, and then watering that down and applying that before winter storms as a way to not have to apply so much salt. Mm. And it also sticks a little bit better to that road. So it's not going to be like pushed off into the sides, into the vegetation on the side of the roads, which also causes problems.
Interesting.
So when you're driving around in the winter and there's a little bit of winter precipitation on the road, you'll see straight lines.
Love the lines.
Love the lines. Love the That's lines. Brining. That's what they've been doing.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so it's still utilizing salt, but at mm-hmm. a much mm-hmm. less rate, and also applying it in a way where that it will stay where it needs to be.
Exactly.
Interesting.
For the most part. Yeah. I mean, it's still eventually going to run off, but
right.
there's a lot less of it that's going to run off.
Did I hear you say something also about different blades that make a difference? What was that?
Yeah. Here's something I never imagined in my life that I would find exciting and fascinating. But snowplow technology is really interesting. And it's also very expensive, which is another thing that people need to understand. This is all about municipal budgets. But snowplows now can be outfitted with special blades that can articulate. It's not a stationary blade. So it follows the curvature, and the sort of vicissitudes of our roadways so that it's more efficient in removing snow and ice.
Ah.
And then, there are road temperature sensors. There are, newer trucks have more sensitive calibration points. There's all kinds of really interesting things. And then just learning about, municipalities have known this for a while, but people, just general people learning that varies in sundry chloride applications only work at certain temperatures. Mm-hmm. So if it's really cold and it's, you know, it's below zero, it doesn't matter how much you're going to put down. It just doesn't work because it's too cold.
So it's useless.
It's useless, right. So, you know, there are ways that are effective at every temperature to keep yourself from falling down. And Laura will talk about that. But, yeah, it's really, truly fascinating. And just, you know, there was this great story from a few years ago. The city of Cudahy had purchased new trucks. And they come from the manufacturer calibrated already to deposit a certain amount of salt at a certain rate. And they started to wonder if that was really true because it seemed like they were depositing quite a bit of salt. And it turned out that they had to completely recalibrate their new trucks. And they used something like, I don't remember what it was, but it was like 60% less salt or something like that. So, you know, Cudahy, the director of the Department of Public Works at the time, you know, sort of did this e-blast to all of the municipalities and said, you know, calibrate your trucks and don't do it just before the season. Do it before the season, during the season, and obviously after the season, just to make sure everything is really efficient because it saved them a phenomenal amount of money because salt is very expensive to purchase.
Right. And sometimes there are shortages and so on.
Right.
So that's really, really good to know.
And then just having municipalities pay attention to how they store de-icing chemicals. You know, don't leave it out to the elements. It's got to be in something so that you don't keep losing it. Like, for example, if it wasn't stored over these last few months when we've had just gloom and rain and fog, you know, it would just sort of dissipate and be lost forever.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting.
It is interesting.
Well, and you're right that, I mean, I think most of us make a blithe assumption that I mean, a snowplow is a snowplow is a snowplow, and it's just not, and there's not much more basic than just that blade comes down and away you go. But yeah, learning how to even do that fundamental function better and more efficiently is a big step in the right direction.
Yeah.
So, Laura, if your municipalities are working hard on this, are they doing so because the Department of Natural Resources is telling them to, or are they doing it, as far as you know, out of a sense of concern for the environment and for practical reasons too?
I'm sure it's a combination of everything. The DNR does have certain requirements that they do need to meet, from what I understand, when it comes to that. I definitely have to meet the education and outreach portion for them.
You know, it pains people to see a pile of de-icing chemical in the road. Mm-hmm. When snowplows come to a stop and the back part is still spinning and de-icing chemical is still coming out. We used to get so many phone calls during the winters when we actually had snow and ice. And, you know, certainly the municipalities would get a lot of angry phone calls. Part of Laura's job and what was my job was to try to get the municipalities and people kind of, you know, syncing up together. You know, yes, the municipalities are trying. No, it isn't perfect. And here's what you can do. And sometimes, you know, if it's a business that just takes that bag of salt and just blankets the walkway, and if you could just get them to shovel it up, you know, you don't need all of that. Just shovel it up and save it for the next time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's move on to what regular citizens can do, just regular residents. I know that's one focus of Wisconsin Saltwater Awareness Week as well, not just waiting for the city of whatever or the town of whatever to do something about this. But those of us who just live here, there are things we can do as well. What are some of the most important things?
Well, I definitely remember that it's all about traction, not perfection. Mm-hmm. It's about kind of making sure that that bond between the snow and the road isn't compacted down. When you get that compaction, then it gets cold, and that's where your ice is going to come from. So shovel often, shovel early. And I know it sounds like, oh my gosh, I have to go out and shovel like 8 times instead of one. It is so much easier to shovel when you don't have a lot of snow to shovel. Mm. I mean, it takes 5 minutes to get out there sometimes and do that. You really only need 3 inches between each salt crystal. So when you are scattering salt, I've heard people use Parmesan shakers, or there's shakers you can buy, or just making sure you're laying it down. It's It's a 12-ounce solo cup for 10 sidewalk squares. It really covers a lot in a little amount with a little amount of salt. Closing off walkways that are not necessary to use in the winter. Hmm. Why spend the time shoveling them, salting them, if you're going to get one person walking on them? Just shut it down and use the other side or something like that. So that's been really helpful. And at under 15 degrees, like we talked about, salt is absolutely useless. So when under 15 degrees, if you're spreading salt, you're just, here's pollution. Here's pollution,
And useless pollution.
And useless pollution, right. So we can switch to sand, which, of course, everything you put on the ground is going to have its own implications later on. But you can use sand. I've heard people use bird seed is really nice for traction. It's also really nice for the birds. So those are some options that you can do. And definitely, if you're hiring somebody, hire contractors that are aware of these issues and that want to work with you about how much salt they're putting down. Because really, at the end of the day, if they're putting down more salt, they're charging you more. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a win-win.
All of this salt awareness and working with municipalities actually started in Minnesota. And there was, at that time, quite some time ago, there was a business called Fortin Consulting. And it was run by a woman named Connie Fortin. And she and her colleagues had done so much research on the effect of chloride contamination, but also the effect of salt use by the municipalities, the cost, how to save money, how to effectively apply it, snowplow technology, road technology even. There's technology that's being experimented with, making the roads darker than what they are so that, in the winter it heats up faster and it melts things, which has an implication then in the summer because, then you're creating heat islands. So, there's always an equal and opposite reaction, right? And so this information is just, trickled down into places where it's needed. Now, not all of the states in the U.S. have this problem because you just don't, if you live in Georgia, you're not going to salt the streets very much. But for the places that do, it's critical information and it's critical research to tap into. And in Minnesota, they have a certification course for municipalities to go through the training. And so we'd love to have something like that here as well, an official certification course.
Okay.
But we still have those training opportunities for municipalities and private contractors who do road work and parking lots and that sort of thing. And so if you're looking for that sort of thing, it can be found. You can contact Laura at Root Pike Wynn, or you can contact Allison Madison at Saltwise. It's on their website. It's a really wonderful website. You can learn a lot there.
Very good. So there's not much in the way of other substances we can lay down to melt salt. It sounds like not too much exists in that respect.
There are other non-chloride-based chemicals. They're acetates. But they have their own difficulties. And they have their own side effects, one of which is creating an anoxic condition in waterways. So it decreases the amount of oxygen in a pond, lake, or stream, which is bad.
Yeah.
They're also extremely expensive compared to chloride-based chemicals. So, people are definitely looking into it. It may end up just being a technology-based thing. So heated roadways, darker roadways, and a little bit more manual labor, perhaps, on occasion. So.
There you go. I'm reminded of my alma mater, and that was in northeast Iowa, and during the iciest and snowiest winters, there were always several sidewalks that would remain completely clear, and that was because there were tunnels underneath, and they were heated tunnels. And just the fact that there was a heated tunnel beneath this particular sidewalk meant that that was completely clear during the winter, and they didn't have to lay anything down at all. And I don't know if that was on purpose. I suspect it was a happy accident, but anyway, it's too bad we don't have heated tunnels everywhere. But that would also probably cause certain problems. But in a sense, it just kind of gets you thinking about what's going on and how can we tackle this. And it sounds like a lot of smart people are thinking about this from a lot of different angles.
I want to emphasize something Laura just said. It's not about perfection. It's about traction. So when you're putting a de-icing chemical on your sidewalk or driveway, your goal is not to get rid of every single snowflake or every little piece of ice. What you're trying to do is rough it up, make it spalted. In other words, lots of, you know, holes and all that sort of thing. So the ice is no longer slippery. That's your goal. So it's not perfection. And unfortunately, Laura and I used to comb through pictures of people applying de-icing chemicals, and it was just amazing. You know, a bucket full for one square of a sidewalk, and you truly do not need that much at all. The thing that I used to really harp on are cleats for your shoes. I mean, you could walk on an iced over pond and not fall down. And there's all different kinds of them now. It used to be just something called yak tracks, and you pull them over your shoes, and it's this springy rubber tubing, and it's got sort of metal coils around it, and you just don't fall down. But there are all different kinds of them. And, you know, if everybody had several pairs of those in their home, nobody would fall down. There's a, you know, just as Laura said, shovel off and shovel early anytime you can, because it prevents it from getting packed down and freezing on the sidewalk or driveway. Certainly, there's lots of different things. Yes,
there's that.
There's a big ice buster, and I forget what it's called, but it's a big metal bar, and it you know, you put it down and you just kind of scrape it up and you're good to go. Sawdust works as well if you have access to sawdust. Some people use the ashes from their fireplace. And again, everything has an impact. Everything has an effect, but it has a lesser effect than chloride. And chloride, you know, de-icing chemicals are actually used in the summertime too. So, you know, when you go to state fairs or these big events that still have, sort of dirt parking lots, you know, soil parking lots, to keep the dust down, they sprinkle sodium chloride over it because it attracts water. So instead of watering it, it keeps the dust down. But then when it rains, where does it go? It goes into the nearest body of water.
Wow.
Then you have to think about your water softener as well. So you put water softener salt in, and when it discharges an enormous amount of salt. And where does that go? So, you know, have your water softener checked. If you have a really old one, if at all possible, get a new one, because they're so much more efficient. So there are a lot of things that we could be doing.
Interesting. So, Laura, talk us through what's going to be presented next week during Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week. Just to reiterate, there are going to be presentations that that people can watch and learn even more about this. So talk us through what's going to happen next week.
Yeah, so it's, again, it's going to be five speakers over 5 days. We're going to start on Monday, January 23rd. We'll run through Friday, the 27th. 30-minute lunchtime live streams from the Wisconsin Saltwise YouTube channel. You can also register tinyurl.sawwisconsin2023, so Salt Awareness Week Wisconsin 2023. But we're going to speak with Sujay Koshal from the University of Maryland. He's going to speak about freshwater salinization, and Nan mentioned that concept, which is why we're here. And that'll be on Monday. And on Tuesday, Charlie Paradis from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee is going to talk about, he's going to track the salt from the winter roads to the summer stream, so you can really see that movement. On Wednesday is Allison Couture, who's going to talk about salty drinking water and human health. Thursday, it's going to be Shannon Hayden from the Wisconsin DNR, and she's going to talk about how they're handling this problem. And then on Friday is Allison Madison of Wisconsin Saltwise, and she is going to talk about how individuals can be a champion in their community.
Very good. So for people to watch these, is there something they need to do? Do they need to register? Or will these be very openly and freely available?
They are freely available on the Wisconsin Saltwise YouTube channel, but you are, it is recommended to register so that you can kind of keep up to date with what's going on. And it's a nice little reminder. And I put that onto a tiny URL just to keep it really simple. So it's tinyurl.com/SAWWisconsin2023.
Very, very good. Nan, anything you want to add about the specific topic of salt awareness?
No, I just want to encourage people to take advantage of Salt Awareness Week and these half-hour sort of lunch and learn kind of things, because the more we study, the more we learn, and then the more we take advantage of that data, the better off everybody will be, whether you're a business owner or a farmer or a homeowner or business owner, whatever it might be. There's something all of us can do to help lessen this difficulty that we've created.
Very good. Laura, I think it would be interesting in our last couple of minutes to hear a little bit more in general about Root Pike Win and the kind of concerns which they address. And, of course, this is something about which Nan is also very, very much aware, having worked for Root Pike Win for many, many years. Mm-hmm. So particularly maybe for the sake of newcomers to the area who might have little or no understanding of Root Pike Win, explain why you exist.
Yeah. Well, Root Pike Win is a 501c3 nonprofit with their mission of restoring, protecting, and sustaining the watersheds of southeastern Wisconsin. So we provide habitat restoration that protects and improves water quality in rivers, lakes, and streams. We facilitate projects and seek funding to support them. And then we have two programs. We have the Respect Our Waters program, which we talked about, and then a pollinator patch program, which, if the listeners out there didn't already know, Nan used to manage that. And she's laid this beautiful foundation for us to work. And it's really interesting and a neat program because we provide native plant garden installations at underserved schools within southeastern Wisconsin. And it really offers these students who are from areas that are hit hardest usually from things like climate issues, and amongst other difficult things, a hands-on opportunity to learn how to create their own resilient habitats and connect with Wisconsin natural heritage, their school, their community, and it just provides a ton of really cool STEAM curriculum opportunities.
Very good. Remind our listeners about what we're talking about when it comes to the Root Pike watershed. I mean, just what kind of an area does that encompass, and what does that mean?
What the heck is a watershed,
that
Laura?
That is a great question, and before I started this job, I did not know, and I had to learn. So a watershed is a geographical area of land where all the water that falls onto it or flows under it is exiting that piece of land into the same body of water. So thinking of topography of a piece of land, when the water or when the rain falls on the ground, where is it going to flow to? So we have five watersheds that we work with within southeastern Wisconsin: the Root, the Pike Creek, the Pike River, the Wind Point, and the Oak Creek watersheds. So wherever you are, home, school, hanging with friends, you are on a watershed. So what you're doing on that land is going to affect that water.
It seems to me that one of the trickiest things about this is the fact that a watershed exists. Wherever you are, you're in the middle of a watershed, and yet it's something, in a sense, completely invisible, and most of us walk around with absolutely no awareness of that.
And that's why I got into environmental stuff, because there's so much to be aware of now.
Right.
I mean, there's just so much.
So explain why it matters to be aware of a watershed and whether or not that watershed is, in a sense, functioning the way it was created to function.
Well, we all like to survive. We all want to live. We all need fresh water to drink. And the fact that we are so lucky to be near this body of fresh water is unique and rare and something to care about, especially being so close to it, because we really impact it. Yeah, I think it's important to be aware of what's going on, because you can't make changes if you don't know what's going on. And things are going to hit us whether we know about them or not, so we can be at least aware and prepared.
Absolutely.
It's interesting, you know, because those of us who've lived here most of our lives, those of us who were born here, we just take for granted that everybody lives near a big lake the way we do. You know, you can just access it about any time you want to. Such is not the case. I mean, we truly are unique and lucky to live where we live. And I think if more people were aware of that, acutely aware of that, it would make a big difference in terms of water quality.
Mm-hmm. Laura, are there other groups in Wisconsin like Root Pike Win? And what connection with them exists? I mean, is this something that involves cooperation between agencies like Root Pike Win and its counterparts?
Root Pike Win wouldn't survive without working with lots of great people. So we work directly with municipalities. We work with other environmental groups all over Wisconsin. we are doing, we're actually rolling, we work with Sweetwater, which is does something very similar to what Rupaikwin does when it comes to education and outreach. They run the Respect Our Waters program independently, but we also come together and work together with this, under the same program umbrella. And we're rolling out, we're going to relaunch the website this year, so a lot of great information is going to come out. We're planning for March 22nd, which is World Water Day. But yeah, it really takes a group of people to make projects and things move forward. So it takes municipal efforts. It takes maybe landowners and the community nearby, businesses. It really takes an army to make some of these projects come forward.
Right, and you know it's interesting. It's probably just as well in the some of the specific work that you do. It's probably just as well that you come to this not as you know, for instance, a scientist who's known all of this nearly all your life, and all of this kind of, in a sense, goes without saying, and you come to this in a sense as a bit of a newcomer, which is, I should think, so valuable when it comes to figuring out how to tell this story to the rest of us who don't know anything about any of this.
New secrets that I'm learning and I'm excited to share them.
That's a good observation, though, because there's a certain energy and enthusiasm that comes from someone like Laura, people who have come to this recently. And I think it puts other people who don't know anything about this at ease when they ask questions or say, gosh, I had no idea, you know. They feel more comfortable talking about it and admitting that, oh, my, you know, why didn't I know that? I should have known that kind of a thing. So, yeah, it's very important.
And it's okay you didn't know. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's your learning, you know.
Absolutely.
I didn't know, before I started this job, I didn't know what a watershed was. We learn, you know.
Absolutely. And that's part of what being a human being is all about.
Absolutely.
Well, and of course, what we really want people now to be thinking about is learning more about salt, mm-hmm. the presence of salt in our environment and the harmful impact that it can have, particularly on our waterways and our And towards that end, next week, of course, again, is Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week. And once again, Laura, if people want to be sure to be able to access these special presentations that are being shared with the public next week, what do they do?
Definitely check out the Wisconsin Saltwise YouTube channel. If you want a reminder, you can register at tinyurl.com/SAW, Salt Awareness Week, Wisconsin 2023, SAW Wisconsin 2023. And we'll be sharing a lot of great information on our social media pages all throughout the week. So definitely check out Rupaikwin, Rupaikewyn, on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and or Twitter. You can follow us on these platforms if you're interested in learning about local restoration projects happening right here, or if you want to get involved. And you can learn a lot more on our website, rupaikwin.org.
Wonderful. Laura Buska, who heads up communication for Rupaikwin and is the manager of the Respect Our Waters program. Great to have you back on the morning show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Nan, I think you have a couple of announcements before we finish up.
I certainly do. I just want to emphasize something Laura said moments ago. World Water Day is in March, and I highly encourage people to there's a World Water Day website, and it is so fascinating and mind-blowing to learn about what the world's water supply faces at this point in time, what's being done about it, and what we can all do about it. So I know it's really difficult to tell what season we're in. Is it winter? Is it spring? Is it just called gray now? I don't know. But pretty soon, maple sugaring will be hitting every nature center in the area, and there are so many wonderful programs for families and schools, and we'll talk about that more next month. But just put that in your tickle file. Maple sugaring is coming soon. So the first thing we're going to announce is something that's happening at Riverbend Nature Center. It's called a Chilly Winter Evening and Candlelight Trails. There's a little play on words there. This will happen on Friday, January 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. There will be candlelight trail walks. It'll be guided through a winter evening forest. Afterwards, you can have hot chocolate around the campfire, and that's free. Donations are welcome, of course, and there will be beer available from Black Husky Brewing Company and wine as well for purchase. Then, if the conditions permit, there will be snowshoes and skis available to rent, first come, first served. The chili part is C-H-I-L-I. So if you want chili, It's an option. Before or after, you can have a hearty bowl of chili, either vegetarian or non-vegetarian, around the campfire. And actually, it's going to be cooked over the campfire. There will be soft drinks and s'mores. Beer and wine will be available for purchase. There will be inside and outside seating available, first come, first served. Please go to the Riverbend Nature Center's website. You'll learn about registration and cost and all that sort of thing. That sounds really fun. Secondly, Pringle Nature Center is having a Groundhog Day celebration on February 2nd at 9 a.m. There will be 6 weeks of winter. We don't know. Maybe there won't be any more winter. We have no idea. Only Bristol Bob knows for sure. Come out to Bristol Woods to hear a story about groundhogs, try a groundhog craft or a scavenger hunt, and of course, there will be a special appearance by Pringle's own piliferous prognosticator, Bristol Bob. The story and Bob's prediction will take place at 9 o'clock in the morning, followed by a self-guided craft and scavenger hunt inside